Candidates Forum is a great opportunity to learn about the candidates before you vote, so let's get started. All right, I want to invite you all to make your opening statements. We go in reverse alphabetical order by first name. I know it's a little quirky. So Danny, you're going to start and you get 60 seconds. The timekeeper is right there. Do you see her?
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Danny Sauter. I've lived in District 3 for the past 10 years with my wife. And over those last 10 years, at every turn, I've looked for ways to serve our community. That started as serving as the president of North Beach Neighbors, where I've done everything from lead the effort to start the North Beach Farmers Market, work on legislation to fill up our empty storefronts, organize monthly street cleanups, and start a free restaurant delivery to support our restaurants during the pandemic. I know that public safety is on all of our minds tonight. That's why I've worked to organize town halls with our district attorney, police walks with our captain at Central Station. I'm the only candidate in this race endorsed by the San Francisco Democratic Party. I'm also proud to have support from organizations including the Sierra Club, the Chinese American Democratic Club, and more than 60 other community organizations, community leaders, and labor unions. And I look forward to our conversation tonight. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Eduardo Navarro. I come from architecture and finance. I'm running because I think we need to unite and defend San Francisco. Our borders go way beyond our local issues into national and international issues. I think my background, however, is very appropriate for knowing how to build 82,000 units of housing in the city without having to resort to skyscrapers or messing up our neighborhoods. Also, my background in finance for making our budgets be efficient and that our rules don't overlap over each other is something that I'm used to dealing with large bureaucracies and being able to be effective in that space. I've been here 2.5 years. I met my boyfriend 1 week into being here. And it's a very exciting city because it's the most open city I've ever lived in. I've lived in many cities around the world, and this one really is something of San Francisco values that we have to cherish and that we have to defend. I look forward to answering the questions tonight, and thanks for being here.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Matt Susk. I'm a third generation San Franciscan, a former small business owner, and I'm running for the Board of Supervisors because San Franciscans deserve safe streets, thriving businesses, and government accountability. I'm not a career politician. I'm a businessman who loves my hometown. Having grown up right here in District 3, I understand San Francisco's unique culture and its unique challenges. My opponents have campaigned on defunding the police, supported a cop tax, and fought to keep affordable grocery stores out of our neighborhoods. They've tried, and they've simply failed with the same old insider playbooks. It's time for an outsider's perspective. I believe in public safety, cutting costs, and investing in our local economy, and I've got the record to prove it. I'm endorsed by the San Francisco Police Officers Association, and I spent the past decade in the private sector, advising government pension plans, starting a small business right here in San Francisco, and helping thousands of families achieve their dream of homeownership.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Mo Jamil. I'm a 22-year resident of San Francisco and a proud 10-year resident of District 3. I'd like to give a shout out to my wife, Annie, and my two children, Oliver and Kate, who are watching at home. I love you, and I'll be back soon. My father came to this country in 1966 as an immigrant from Jordan with a dream. And he started at the bottom as a busser at Original Joe's on Taylor Street, became a carpenter, together with my mother, started a small business. And they had a dream that I would be the first person in my family to go to college, and that's what I did through the good graces of Cal Grants and Pell Grants. A proud Cal Bear and Santa Clara Bronco law graduate, I made my way to the San Francisco City Attorney's Office, serving under our city attorney, David Chu. I've also been a 10-year neighborhood organizer, first as president of Middle Polk Neighborhood Association, now on the board of Russian Hill Neighbors. Been active member of the Telegraph Hill Dwellers as well as the North Beach Neighbors. I love this city, and I'm asked for your vote. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for being here. I'm Sharon Lai, and I'm an immigrant. I grew up in public housing in Hong Kong and came to California by myself when I was 16, looking for better opportunities like a lot of people before me. And I'm now raising my two boys in the district, and I have made San Francisco my chosen home for my entire adulthood. My heart has always been in public service, and my very first career in San Francisco was to be a city planner. I've served the city for over 15 years in public service and have made this my home for 19 years. I believe that San Francisco right now, it's really important that we have competent and balanced representation. And that means that we need people who are from and have the expertise from the public, private, and nonprofit sectors, which I have. I've advanced public safety on Muni. I have worked to advance thousands of units of housing at all income levels. And I believe that when we build the protection to advance the middle class, as well as keeping working families in San Francisco, that is how we get to a resilient place. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Wendy Hall Chow. I have been a resident of San Francisco for two decades, and I have been a resident of District 3 for 16 years. And the reason why that's important, because I have deep understanding what the community needs. I have seen a lot of crazy stuff in Lower Knob Hill that affect all of us. The understanding is that these policy shapes how the crime, because of the crime rise and the homelessness. The government's responsibility is to serve and protect the public by creating and enforcing law, ensuring safety, and providing essential services. The elected official has failed us. They failed because of the policy that they have. My professional background is I'm a civil rights attorney. I have experience in administrative law and constitutional law
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to get started with our first question now. And the very first question, we're going to start with you, Eduardo. It will be, how will you balance working with other district supervisors to meet the needs of the city while also meeting the needs of District 3?
Well, I think that's it's an easy question. As an entrepreneur, I've always run my own show, and you have to be quite resourceful and creative in bringing people together to get things done. I think with a board of 11, plus a mayor, plus a very extensive ordinance and code, I think one has to have that capacity to be able to keep the end goal in mind and be able to harness the resources and the coalitions that you need to get things done. That's something that's been my entire life. So that's how I would get that done.
Excellent. And then the next person is Matthew.
Yeah, so I think it's extremely important that we figure out a way to get a majority on the Board of Supervisors that is pragmatic folks that want to see real results. And as an outsider, I've been able to build relationships with candidates running in other districts across the city. And I think that is paramount, that we make sure new people come in, outsiders come in, and we're really able to see that change. So to help build those coalitions, I've been able to support candidates across the city. And I ask all of you to make sure to go out and see who's running in other districts, because it does matter as we write ordinances in the city and legislate in this city that affects everyone. So it's making sure that moderate voices come together across this city to make sure that we're able to see that change.
All right, Mo.
I commit first to pledge to the residents of this district. I ask for your support because I will have your back at every turn. If you live in this district, if you run a small business in this district, it is my job as a supervisor to be your chief advocate at City Hall. In that, I am well aware of other districts and other supervisors, and I will build coalitions with them. There's going to be supervisors we agree with, particularly on protecting and preserving our neighborhoods. There's going to be supervisors I disagree with. And there's going to be times to go to the mat to fight for you. There's going to be other times where we're going to be able to build consensus across the board, and I will work for that. But I'll tell you one thing, I will never sell out the constituents of this district.
Sharon?
I have worked to advocate for our community for close to 20 years in San Francisco, including fighting against big tobacco on the anti-Juul measure, including making sure that we are building affordable housing and fighting for funding for our public transportation system. I will say that, you know, my demonstrated track record to advocate for your interests for the working families and the middle class in the city is very clear. Having said that, one legislator on your own cannot pass any laws at the Board of Supervisors. There are 11 districts. I'm the only candidate in this race that has received the endorsement from 8 of the other supervisors. That obviously doesn't mean I agree with all of them all the time. That would be impossible. They themselves don't agree with one another. But it's really important that we elect leadership that understands how to navigate not just government, but how to work across differences. That is how I will be effective for you on day one, because I know how to collaborate, I know how to convene, and that is the kind of sensible leadership that we need in this moment of turmoil in our city. Thank you.
Wendy?
I wanted to let you guys know that you guys would be my number one, because I have always advocate for people, because I'm a civil rights attorney. The only people that I serve and protect are the people that I represent. As an attorney, I do mediation, and so I work with the other opposing side, and we come to a resolution. Even though not everyone's going to be happy, but we come to a solution that makes sense for everyone. When I get elected, I will work with and create a relationship with other district supervisors to work together to get things done.
Danny?
First, I think there is too much toxicity in San Francisco politics. We need to turn down the temperature and actually focus on results for our neighborhoods instead of so much fighting. District 3 will be my first priority, of course, but there's so much work that we need to do that involves collaborating with other districts. Let's take, for example, an example that is so close to us this evening. Finishing the Central Subway, making sure it gets to North Beach and to Fisherman's Wharf, that is a project that goes from District 3 to District 6 to District 10. It's going to take relationships with other folks, not only in the Board of Supervisors to do that, but certainly in a case like this, people, leaders from our state level and from our federal level. That's the sort of leadership that I bring to this office as a 10-year community organizer in these neighborhoods, someone who's been focused on results, not focused on the politics and the fighting. There's too much of that. There's already enough of that.
Thank you. Okay. Excuse me. We will now move on to our next question. And we're going to start, just so that I give you a heads up, we're going to start with you, Matt. The San Francisco Department of the Environment's Climate Action Plan calls for cutting net carbon emissions to zero by 2040. One of the goals of the Climate Action Plan is to make 80% of all trips low carbon by 2030. And that means things like walking, biking, and public transit, and also including things like cars. If you're elected, what is your plan to make local and regional transit more efficient, increase ridership, and close the overall funding gap that San Francisco is currently facing? And that's a big question, right? But
there's a lot there.
Right.
So, it's a great question. I think that we need to continue to push forward towards a net zero carbon footprint in this city. And I think that one thing for me where I disagree with some of my fellow opponents is I don't think that we should be extending the Central Subway right now. I think it's a fantastic idea and something that we should invest in the long term, but right now it is irresponsible to say that we should be extending it. We do not have the budget to do so. We are headed into a deficit and we cannot be doing that right now. What we should be doing is expanding our bus network. Buses cost about $400,000 and get put on the streets within weeks. They can be profitable quickly. We need to make sure that people are paying their fair share on those buses. I have volunteers on my campaign that are high schoolers that come out to District 3 every week, and they tell me they're seeing people smoke fentanyl. They see people with knives on the buses. We need to make sure that our bus system is clean and safe so that everyone can use it. Thanks.
Mo?
I'm a proud supporter of Prop L on the ballot, and that's going to give more by taxing Waymo, Uber, and Lyft to pay their fair share to fund our public transit system will get us closer to the goal of making Muni free for more people in the city. I'd first start with the free Muni Central City Zone, and then if we can continue to improve ridership
we should look for financial ways to make it free for the entire city. Also, I think it's really important to include the community process in these types of decisions. If we're going to have bike lanes coming down through North Beach in our neighborhoods, we need to make sure that the communities involved, our local businesses are involved in that discussion. We can make every form of transit better, but we don't do it by pitting people against each other.
Thank you. Sharon?
So I'm the only candidate, I think, who's worked actually in climate. That was my most recent job. And I want to just highlight that, yes, reducing carbon from trips are very important, but so is removing carbon from buildings. That's actually one of the biggest contributors. So I am someone who served as your commissioner on the SFMTA, and I joined the MTA a couple of years ago because I was attacked on Muni. The main three things that we need to do to improve ridership and to make sure more people are riding public transportation is to make it safer, more reliable, and more cost-effective, essentially. I led the geobond measure 2 years ago to try to help fund our transportation. Unfortunately, it failed by 1.5%. Like Mo, I'm also a big advocate of Prop L. We need to continue to fully fund our public transportation systems. I also, during the pandemic, advocated to bring back community bus lines like the 8AXBX that serves our community because the travel patterns have changed and we have to adapt to the needs of our community.
Wendy?
I agree with a lot of all the candidates that went ahead of me about this topic, but also I believe the riders should also start paying their share in the bus share instead of going on the bus for free.
Danny? I think we gotta get a mic down to you.
Thank you. So public transportation is one of our most effective responses to our climate crisis. 45% of our emissions in San Francisco come from private vehicles. So we do need to make it a lot more attractive to get around our city without a car. I touched on a really ambitious project to do just that, extending the Central Subway. That's going to take time, but it is a project that this community deserves. In the meantime, how we can do it more quickly and how we can do it more cost-effectively is expanding things like our rapid bus lanes. We have a project on Van Ness that, of course, took too long. It was, of course, too expensive, but it gives a sense, a glimmer of what could be if we have more rapid bus lanes throughout San Francisco. That project, the mistakes aside, is now working fantastic. It has increased ridership on that route by 40%, and the reason being is that that line is now 40% faster. We know, we've seen on every single line, both in San Francisco and around the world, when we make buses faster, more people take them, and it creates more complete communities. That would be my focus.
And last but not least.
Thank you. So I think transit, we need to change the paradigm and rethink of how we think of public transit. It's not the opposite, nor should it be just the alternate of the car. I think reaching a net zero emissions generally, for anything, we should be ambitious. We should be ambitious because we're San Francisco, the bed of innovation, and leaders in the world for some of these things. So when we talk about transit, we should think about transit in a regional way. We should think about the entire Bay Area and how the transit network can actually function within all the different townships. Locally, I think we have to work with many other components that say, why should we think of transit as the negative? There are many systems, European systems, where buses are the more attractive option. Sometimes the metro is a more attractive option. Having that competition between systems allows us to have a much more hybrid and open possibility as a user.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to start with Mo for this next question. So I'm just giving you the heads up. Let me make sure I'm right about that. Yes, I am. And so this is by mandate. San Francisco needs to build roughly 82,000 housing units by 2031. How many units do you think will be in District 3? How many would be affordable housing versus market rates? And how will you build a plan that includes families and working class people in your plans for affordable housing?
I firmly believe in local control when it comes to housing decisions. 82,000 units, 52,000 of which have to be below market rate, is an aspirational goal set by the state. San Francisco for decades has built about 2,000 units a year, and if they've done it the right way with community input and community process. Truth is, we have an affordability crisis. We need to focus on investing and building affordable housing, and the best affordable housing is the affordable housing we have, and that is rent control, and we need to preserve those units. There's plenty of places to build in District 3. You can build at Lombardi's. I've been calling for it for 10 years to turn that into housing. We could build downtown. We can turn office buildings into new housing. And there's plenty of small sites where we can build without destroying the character of our community, because we don't need Fontana Towers shooting up all on our waterfront. And that's exactly what some of our state representatives are laying the path for.
So as a former urban planner and someone who's actually delivered housing in San Francisco at all income levels, I deeply appreciate the struggle it is currently under the market conditions to actually get projects that are approved to be constructed. So right now, it's not actually about the regulation of approval, because we have 70,000 units that are approved in the pipeline, but it's really about unlocking the financial mechanisms to allow these projects to continue. You know, I agree with some of the citations that Mo made. I think it's really important that we continue to leverage public land, including the Kirkland bus yard, which I went to recently on a press conference, encouraging MTA to use it to be redeveloped as a new bus yard, but also as housing. That is what I also pushed for on the Potrero bus yard a couple years ago. We need to continue to work on converting our empty, vacant downtown office spaces into housing. Not every building is suited for that. I have done that kind of work before. It is very complex, but I am the person who can provide the expertise to lead us into that type of conversion, and I'd be excited to do it for all of us. Thank you.
I have a different take from the rest of the candidates. Mine is that San Francisco has $19 billion in land and asset, and I will build 100,000 units in a 60-story beautiful apartment building built by Department of Public Works and other department capable of building these high rises. No contract is needed and no developer is needed. These units will be rented for $500 to $1,500 depending on the bedrooms. It's for government employees and 3,400 people. Then another 2,500 will go to workers such as grocery, small businesses, and services industry workers. And 40,000 units will be rented at $350 and $400. To seniors, veterans, disabled people. And why is it so cheap? It's cheap because it's owned by the government, right? And also it will flood the market with a lot of low income housing, so that will drop the rate of rent.
Danny?
District 3 is already the densest part of San Francisco, but that doesn't absolve us from doing more. And in our District 3 neighborhoods, we know that character and density can go hand in hand. In fact, I think they thrive with one another. We see that in our neighborhoods of District 3. And the good news is we have plenty of space to do it. It's not going to take high rises. It's going to take filling empty parking lots. It's going to take buildings like 659 Union behind us, buildings like Lombardi Sports, buildings like the Tower Annex record site at Bay and Columbus. It's going to take the retail vacancies, some of the largest retail vacancies in all of San Francisco, down at the wharf that can be housing, in our empty downtown office buildings. That all can be housing. And you asked specifically about family units. We need more 2, 3, 4 bedrooms in District 3. The cost of living is too high, but also even if you have the means, so many families have to move out of this district because there's not the space. I'll introduce a family and senior special use district, which says you can have additional density if you give us more homes that are priorities for seniors and families in our district.
Again, here I think we should be more ambitious and ask more from our government. We have a deficient set of tools to deal with what we want to protect and to allow what we want to have. And that is, there is a way of building much housing in the city without resorting to skyscrapers. I usually give Paris as an example. We're a little bit smaller than, or a little bit bigger, sorry, than Paris. Paris has 3 times the density and has not had to resort to skyscrapers. They messed up once, 1970s with Montparnasse, and the joke is that the best view of Paris is from the top of the tower. Now, beyond that, I call for a design framework. I think it would be very exciting for all of us to participate in what the city of the future should look like. Within that, we shouldn't be arbitrary with developers. We should let them function within a context and route that energy without blocking it, but allowing it to be the city that we want to be. We can have a beautiful city, it can continue to be more beautiful with what we do.
You guys are really getting the whole order thing. That's good.
So I believe that District 3, well, it's the densest district in the city. I think it's the district that has the most character in the city. And I think most people would agree with that. We have got wonderful restaurants and shops and local retail. And I think it is a shining example that other districts can follow, that we can have density and we can have character that go hand in hand. That being said, I think District 3 can add housing units. Some of my opponents talked about downtown. I think office to residential is a great way to add more units. We can look at cities like Philadelphia and DC that have done a fabulous job with office to residential conversion as a model. And what they've done is they've offered tax abatements, they've modernized their building code, their fire code, to make sure that the transitions are easier. And I think that's a great place to start. I also think that we should be building in Fisherman's Wharf, and I think it should be a place where families can live, adding 3-4 unit units there so that families can stay and don't need to leave, because that's an area where San Francisco has left families behind, is housing and education.
All right, thank you. Our next question is going to go to Sharon first, just to give you a little heads up. A factor in addressing homelessness in San Francisco is preventing people from becoming unhoused in the first place. What kind of protections, programs, or policies do you support to keep people in their homes?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. I am very proudly endorsed by the San Francisco Tenants Union, as well as CTA, the Community Tenants Association. I myself grew up with a lot of housing insecurity, and without stable housing, there's a lot else in your life that won't go well. So yes, anti-displacement policy is the first and most important step for us to actually stop the homelessness crisis, which is a housing problem. You know, one of the things that I think the city can do more on is actually providing education to tenants, funding that, because right now a lot of the tenant protection education is actually done through volunteers. We have an absolute responsibility to make sure that everybody understands their rights and to make sure that we are advocating for rent control. I'll also say that I'm also somebody who started a housing nonprofit, a homeless housing nonprofit during the pandemic to try to stop chronic homelessness, and be happy to share more about that later. Thank you.
Thank you. Wendy?
Can you repeat the question?
The question? Yeah. Okay. So a factor in addressing homelessness in San Francisco is preventing people from becoming unhoused in the first place. So what kind of protections, programs, or policies do you support to keep people in their homes?
I support a program where the government, the city provides a attorney for tenants so that they can be fairly represented against the landlord, because the landlord has all the money and the tenants doesn't, and so that will help safeguard the tenants' rights, but also to provide more services to tenants where they can get information about other housing needs and an assistant.
Keeping people housed is a very smart investment. It sometimes takes just hundreds of dollars to keep someone in their home rather than tens of thousands of dollars once they're out on the street to try to bring them back in shelter. So these are really smart investments. I will support everything from emergency rental vouchers to fully funding our tenant lawyers. A number of years ago, our city passed Prop F to fund tenant lawyers, but it's never been fully funded. There's more that needs to be done there. And so important in District 3 is just steps from where we are in Chinatown, where we have so many families, so many seniors living in SROs. And many of those individuals are in SROs without master leases. That is incredibly important to make sure that we're supporting organizations like our SRO collaboratives, who actually have relationships with those seniors, with those families in SROs, supporting them, making sure that they have a fair shot against their landlords. That's the work I want to do, and I say that as someone who's a 10-year tenant of District 3 and endorsed by the California Democratic Renters Council.
I think this is one of the reasons that I love San Francisco. I think the ethos or the idea is right. I don't think anybody in this panel would be against protecting people from being evicted from their house. And in fact, a lot of it is about knowing the rights that are already in place and that have been, even within master leases or otherwise, been enacted to protect people from being taken out of their houses. I think beyond that, there are other programs, and we could be creative about coming up with other ideas, for example, paths to ownership. In histories, for example, in Europe and Spain, being quite familiar to me, it went from an 80% tenant in the 1920s to an 80% ownership country. It's the highest in Europe. That's another way to allow people to retain their house. Property taxes, we always seem to leave those out. It's something we should revise, perhaps, because that's one of the other things that's quite unaffordable. Anyway, we're in the right space, but we can be creative about coming up with new things.
I believe that our affordable housing should be available for people in an abstinence setting. They need to be drug and alcohol free so that people who need our support get our support and they live in a community where they can get back on their feet. I'm sick and tired of hearing, certainly we all spend a lot of time talking to people on the streets. I'm sick and tired of hearing from people who live in affordable housing and their neighbors are smoking fentanyl, or they're in the showers and people are doing fentanyl right there while they're trying to take a shower. I'm sick and tired of it. I want to make sure that our affordable housing goes to those people who need our help and want to get back on a path to recovery. That's number one. And number two is we should be investing in a path to home ownership. It's what I did professionally for the last 3 years, turned thousands of families from renters into homeowners. We can expand our first responder and educator down payment assistance fund to help our educators and our first responders live in the communities that they serve.
San Francisco needs to do a much better job of providing emergency rental assistance to those in need. It's a much smarter investment to keep people housed than to continue to pour millions of dollars into nonprofits and homelessness without much results. But I just want to go back to the last question. You can say that you're in favor of mid-rises and all this stuff, but follow the money. Look at the supporters, right? When you have Together SF, SF YIMBY, Northern Neighbors, these are organizations that have opposed tenant protections. These are organizations that would like to get rid of our zoning laws and have high rises along the bay. So it's one thing to say, you know, I'm not going to be supportive of this, but when push comes to shove and your supporters come in the room and say, you know what, we got you elected because this is what we want. I'm elected for the community, not for the deep pockets.
All right, I'm going to do a really quick time check. I don't have my cell phone, so I don't actually know what time it is, and I want to make sure. Okay, thank you. Sorry. So the next question is going to go to Wendy first. I will say that housing and affordable housing was a key trend in the question, so you are going to get a lot of housing questions tonight. So considering recent policies on homelessness in various U.S. cities, what's your view on criminalizing homelessness versus treating it as a socioeconomic issue? What specific actions would you propose to address homelessness in our community?
I don't believe that being homeless is a crime. I believe that the homeless needs help, medical help. A lot of them are mentally ill or drug addicts, and they just really need to be rehabbed, and some needs to be conserved or, you know, evaluated to make sure that they get the proper care they need. So one of the proposals I would like to do is to turn the navigation center into immediate care facility so that it provides treatment and opportunity training for those who are being rehabbed so that they can go back to enter the society and be with dignity and go back to work and stuff like that.
Thank you.
We should not criminalize homelessness. I think we've seen in recent weeks that, with things like sweeps, that as things get better in one neighborhood, be it the Tenderloin, they get worse in another neighborhood like Lower Nob Hill, which is a neighborhood in a part of District 3 that is so often forgotten about. We need to do the hard work to actually invest in the foundational pieces that get people out of homelessness. That includes getting them into shelter. We need more shelter beds. We need more shelter of all types. We do not have a right to shelter law in San Francisco, but there are other cities that have 80, 90% of their individuals who are homeless actually in shelter. We need to step forwards towards that. We also need to lower barriers to recovery. We know that there is so much of a drug crisis. It's not the same as our homelessness crisis, but they're related. We need to make sure that we lower barriers to treatment. There are too many barriers this moment. You know, many of these centers are still working banking hours, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. We need to lower those barriers.
So I'd like to disconnect a concept that we all have in our mind, that it's if you don't have a house, you occupy the street. And I think we have to be quite strong about stopping that. The street belongs to all of us. It's something that is our common living room. And I think what we're all reacting and why we're all interested in this topic is a lot because we see dirty streets, we feel unsafe in those streets, and there's illegal occupation. So if we had, as an example, an earthquake, I think we very quickly would figure out how to create the necessary infrastructure to house, even temporarily, as many people as we needed to. If we treat this as a crisis and understand that the street first has to be emptied, it has to be allowed for everybody, we can then move on to the second issue. Homelessness, I think, maybe we can divide into two quick categories. One is those suffering from hardship, circumstantial, temporal, physical, whatever. I think there's a path to housing in that space. But in terms of mental illness, we need to bring back institutions. They can be humane, but they need to be coming back.
We do not have an affordability crisis. We have a drug crisis on our streets, and we need to start taking that seriously. This is empirical, right? The low end, it's 85% on this percent of people on the streets reject shelter. On the high end, it's up to 98%. These are stats. It is a drug crisis on our streets. We need to make sure that people have access to recovery on demand. Fentanyl changed the game. It is a horrible drug, and that is what the vast majority of people on our streets are using. And we need to make sure that they have access. It can take upwards of 2 years to get clean off fentanyl. And we need to make sure that people can have access. Right now, the vast majority of our recovery facilities are in the Tenderloin. And the temptation is too great in the Tenderloin when your friends are 2 blocks away or your preferred dealer is just a block away. We need to open facilities outside of city limits. We own land in La Honda. We own land up near Hetch Hetchy where we can build recovery facilities so people can get on that path to recovery.
The unhoused crisis has been a challenge in San Francisco for decades, but it's become more acute in recent years. And I agree with much of what was said by Edward and Matt and others that this is a very complex problem. Again, going back to helping people while they're housed, that's one way to treat it. I do believe that we fully need to invest in recovery. I'm proudly endorsed by Supervisor Matt Dorsey. He has had a recovery journey of his own, as well as President Aaron Peskin, who talks about recovery quite openly. We need to help people. We need to help people where they're at. My own mother at age 28 was diagnosed with schizophrenia. She's had inpatient psychiatric treatment over the years. We need to use the Prop 1 money at the state to build the regional network of facilities so they can get help. But I do agree that it's okay to say the situation on the streets is unacceptable. Families should be able to walk their children to school and not have to zigzag across the street.
I believe that leaving people languishing on the sidewalks or using our ERs or our jail system as a revolving door is inhumane. It is also an extremely costly way to deal with the surface level of the problem. You know, that is exactly why I, during the pandemic, was seeing an explosion in our community, being confronted by visible homelessness that we haven't seen in the past. And that is why I quit my very stable job to start Dignity Moves, a statewide homeless housing nonprofit, because we have to continue to invest and innovate in housing solutions that are pragmatic and compassionate at the same time. I built the city's very first tiny homes cabin project at 33 Goff that's still operational, and we did that with philanthropy. We were able to achieve something the city has never been able to achieve before, have public-private nonprofit partnership. We were able to get a permit in record time, 2 weeks. We were able to construct and move people in 2 months, and we were able to build it for a fraction of the cost that the current city spends on housing. Thank you.
Wendy? You answered this
first. I already
answered. Sorry. All right. It happens sometimes. You get a little confused. All right. So the next question. We'll start with Danny. So San Francisco has faced some challenges related to ethical behavior in the past several years. I would say that's probably putting it mildly. But what would you do to reform our checks and balances and transparency around things like political contributions, contract awards, and other city-focused programs to ensure that residents have faith in where their dollars are being spent and they have the right level of information?
Thank you for the question. Two things that I'll prioritize. First is commission reform. We have more than 150 commissions in our city. We have thousands of city commissioners. There are a lot of individuals there who are doing incredible work, but there's also individuals there who are unelected, who are making really important decisions, and that's been part of why we've seen corruption. We've seen it in commissions, but most importantly, something that I do support is a prop on this fall's ballot put on by our Supervisor Peskin, the Inspector General measure. This is something that most other cities have, which is an independent office to actually be tasked full-time with rooting out corruptions, giving protections to whistleblowers, and actually being a force in City Hall, having an independent budget in City Hall to look out for corruption, to be able to actually act independently and stop corruptions. Most other major U.S. cities have it. We don't, and we've seen the result of that. That's why I'm supporting an Inspector General, and I hope all of you will as well.
I think the Inspector General is a good idea also. However, thinking about this problem, there's an idea that sometimes complexity looks like corruption and is just complexity. The idea is to keep things simple. I was reading an ordinance just today, and frankly, by the time you read the end of it, it goes all the way around, and you think you're confused as to what the result is. So complexity is our enemy in terms of making things efficient. To make things efficient, we need to clarify the way that checks and balances are made and really understand the powers that each of these bodies have. I do agree that there are so many commissions, but the spirit of them was done in the right way. It was to keep oversight. Now, ultimately, the way that they're structured and the checks and balances, those need to be quite simple for us to be able to find efficiency and understand it as not just corruption.
So the simple answer is stop electing insiders. We need different people at City Hall. If we continue to elect people from the city family, we will have the same corruption that we read about on a weekly basis. $10,000 in Martha's Vineyard, $100,000 on cigars, a trip to Napa. We hear about it every single week. If we elect people that aren't part of the system, we can start rooting that out. So how would I do that? We introduce quantifiable metrics for every contract that goes out. We centralize our vendors to make sure that it's not every department picking who they want to do deals with. There are very simple things we can do if we don't keep electing the same people over and over and over and expecting different results. And I'll give you another peek behind the curtain. Campaign finance was part of your question. It's out of control. I mean, it's wild. People on this stage are bought and paid for. $500 is a total joke. That is not what people are putting into these campaigns. We need wholesale change.
Thank you. Mo?
You know, in the last debate, one of the candidates was asked about contributions from dark money group Govern for California and didn't answer the question. So I hope that question gets answered tonight. Look, we need to roll back the curtain. We need tighter ethics and compliance laws. I'm a proud member of the San Francisco City Attorney's Office. We have one of the most robust investigatory units, but I also support beefing that up with the Inspector General. this fall. I think that's a great first start. You know, another big issue that Matt touched on is just, you know, we need to have get rid of the no-bid contracts. Highlight the example of Urban Alchemy. They're getting a $10 million contract from the city without a shred of a public process. I mean, talk to neighbors in Nob Hill. They say, wait a minute, these folks are dealing drugs on the side. What's going on? So these are that's just one example, right? So we do need to elect new faces. We'll have a new supervisor in District 3, and we'll lead that change.
Okay, don't fall asleep. I'm going to talk about contract management and procurement reform. It's a passion of mine. It might not mean much to you, but basically a third in public spending is in procurement. That means just how we buy things, the city as a whole. This is how we buy paper, this is how we buy paint. And in general, when we look at how that is done, it is extremely inefficient. If you look at the RFPs that get sent out, the request for proposals, it looks like it's written by aliens. This is part of the reason why we're so inefficient when it comes to managing our city, and it allows for really only big players who has the ability to navigate the complexity of city government and bureaucracy to participate. This is actually one of the areas of reform that I'd be super excited to lead on. I'm so passionate about this that I actually am on the start of a founding board of an organization that helps government perform better when it comes to procurement. That is one of the main ways we can actually help reach our equity goals, uplifting our small businesses and minority businesses. I also want to say that, you know, thank you.
Okay, I think we are on, yes, we're on question seven. Oh, see, I did it again. I'm sorry.
I believe that we have to reduce the commissioners, the amount of commissioners we have, or just get rid of it because they're not elected official. They're not elected by the people. We should have the board of supervisors overseeing all the departments. They could have a system, but the department has to oversee it. We also have to audit all the programs because a lot. If you heard on the news, there was the public works corruption. There's also the nonprofits embezzling money or taking the money of the public. So we need to put strict standard metrics on the nonprofit and make sure and go through each department and make sure that the money are used wisely.
Thank you. All right, we are on our next question. All right, so we're going to start with you. So the question is, do you support or oppose a plan that will make reparations to San Francisco's African-American community? And what do you see as the supervisor's role regarding this issue?
Well, I think this is a question we touched upon on the last debate. And I think it cannot be seen in isolation. Frankly, I'm not an expert in this matter. But I do believe that there should be equality in being able to reach goals for all kinds of populations. And I think this is one of the nice things about San Francisco. This is the reason I'm here. This is the reason I'm willing to defend San Francisco, both on this stage, on the national and international stage. I think we're a very accepting bunch. I think the very fact that we're having these ideas or these propositions speaks to how we think about the world and our world vision. That world vision has been under attack and has been at the end of so many jokes nationally. So both reparations, which I would support if I would need to understand them better, frankly. But I think we need to package our values and be able to really defend what that means as San Francisco values beyond even our own city. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, we touched on this last week at a debate in Chinatown, and I had the opportunity to speak with someone, a D3 resident. I don't see him tonight, but we talked afterwards, and he sent me a long email afterwards, and we discussed reparations. And one of the things that came out of it was understanding what cash payments, what equity payments look like. And it's something that I want to more deeply study. And one thing that I read, which really bothered me that we spoke about for a while, was in cases where we've seen forms of reparations occur, cash payments have gone out and they've been spent immediately. And I think that's something that we should really be cautious of. I think that it's something where if something like this were to occur, we make sure that the wealth creation occurs and it isn't just spent immediately. And I think that's something really important and somewhere where I want to continue to study to understand what happens with these programs.
One of the tragic mistakes of San Francisco, our original sin, was the redevelopment and the destruction of the Fillmore and Japantown. And I think the city does owe it to that community to own up to that and to figure out ways to economically empower that community through continued rental assistance and pathways for home ownership. We need to have economic empowerment for everyone in San Francisco, and the number one way to do that is to fight back against gentrification and displacement. And that's something that gentrification and displacement is happening in District 3, but it's happening citywide. One of the areas where you don't hear about it so much is in the southeast, and in District 10, District 11. I'll partner with the supervisors there to have a comprehensive strategy to keep black and brown and other ethnic communities in the city. We can figure this out.
I agree with a lot of what's been said. You know, it's really important that San Francisco, as, you know, liberal leaders in our country, we have to create tolerance and space to have these difficult conversations and really genuinely honor them. You know, one of the things that I think we have to focus on is really immediately what can we do to right those wrongs, as Mo said. You know, one of the things that I really focused on a couple of years ago was advocating for universal childcare, because studies have shown that interventions as early as possible in a child's life is what's going to make the most impact in terms of outcome and upward mobility. It is also why, when I was leading Dignity Moves, I built these vocational training programs so that the black youth in our community, through Success Center, we build a partnership so that they can have vocational training and have apprenticeship hours so that they can have stable and well-paying jobs when they graduate. And so we have to look immediately into our communities and our resources at ways where we can correct the equity, the inequity that has existed in our history. Thank you.
I don't believe in reparation because it doesn't really solve anything. It's stuff that happened in the past. What we do is think forward and what we can do to help the people to have opportunity, such as if you look at some of the policies are very, race-based, and so we should, because there's something called institutional racism, which is within the policy itself. So it's important to do some policy that will help people. For example, there's the regulation on how to build homes and or opening a business. So if we can loosen the regulation and in the permit fee so that the low-income people can actually start businesses and stuff like that.
Last year, the San Francisco Reparations Task Force put out this study, which put forward hundreds of recommendations to be a step towards reparations. And so although one or two of them got the headlines as it relates to payments, there are hundreds more in that report, which I'd encourage you to review. I think for me, this was a reminder, and I hope for all of us, this is a reminder that San Francisco is not immune from mistakes. It's not immune from an ugly past in moments, particularly around redevelopment in the Fillmore. We have taken some steps forward to correct that. As you look at things like our certificate of preference to give priority to families and descendants of those displaced in our affordable housing lottery, but we have to do more. We have to do more as it relates to workforce development. And I see this study, I see this this task force as a way to have that conversation. There are some of these that we can implement quite quickly. There are others that, frankly, we just won't be able to implement. But this is a promise to our communities of color, particularly our black community, which has been decimated over decades in San Francisco.
Okay, the next question, we'll start with Matt. So District 3 isn't just North Beach and Russian Hill. How will you help, or how will you focus on helping and revitalizing adjacent neighborhoods near Polk Street, the Tenderloin, as well as Chinatown?
So I actually grew up in Nob Hill, so I understand that neighborhood very well, and Lower Nob, and Wendy actually lives in Noor Hub as well, and I've learned a lot from her. and have been invited to events down in Lower Nob as well. So I think that's an area that we really need to focus on. And it's been an area that we haven't focused on enough. And especially with the drug crisis and the enforcements that we're seeing in the Tenderloin right now, a lot of both homeless people, but also, and frankly, more importantly, dealers are getting pushed further and further up into Lower Nob. And that's something that we need to take very seriously and something that in District 3 we haven't had to deal with as much recently. So I think that's an area where, again, I'm endorsed by the San Francisco Police Officers Association, making sure they have the resources to handle what's going on in the Tender Nob. Along Polk Street, to your second part of your question, I walked down it a few weeks ago. There were 43 store vacancies. That is unacceptable. I started a small business here. I understand firsthand how hard it is to open a small business. We need to support those businesses and fill those vacancies.
For the last 10 years, I've been actively involved in every single neighborhood in this district, including Lower Nob Hill and Chinatown. I was looking back through my old photos, and there's a photo of me holding my daughter when she was 4 months old at a CCDC banquet. And I remember those early days of building those relationships in Chinatown and in Lower Nob Hill and other neighborhoods. It's critical. You need to have a candidate and a supervisor who understands each neighborhood inside and out. It's the people on the ground that you need to call upon to organize, to show up at a hearing, to testify, to be out there on the front and center. Every part of this district, obviously, believes they're the most important. Truth is, they're all important. And we need to have a supervisor who shows up in every neighborhood and prioritizes the most urgent needs, which are public safety. I'm also proudly endorsed by the San Francisco Police Officers Association and many more. Thank you.
So I agree, actually, with what Mo was saying. You know, it's really important for our district supervisor to deeply understand the unique character of every single neighborhood and the struggles that they're going through, because there isn't one universal silver bullet that we can apply to fix all of our neighborhoods. The revitalization requires a tailored approach. And I do feel very lucky because I've started, getting to know this district almost, from 2008, when I first started working for the city, working on land use issues, and then later working on transportation issues for our community. I've been coming and serving particularly the Chinatown district, or the neighborhood, for over a decade, and currently serve on the Chinese Hospital Steering Committee that also services the rest of the community here. And I think it's really important that, yes, we have to, of course, address public safety and clean streets. Those are basics. But we also need to focus on how do we generate and bring back foot traffic, because that is actually what we need to uplift our small businesses in our community. Thank you.
I missed the beginning of the questions. Could you repeat it?
It's okay.
I kind of know what they say, but I just want to make sure.
Yep. District 3 isn't just North Beach and Russian Hill. How will you focus on helping and revitalizing adjacent neighborhoods near Polk Street, Tenderloin, as well as Chinatown?
All the neighborhoods are really important, and I agree with Mo that, you know, a district supervisor should, you know, be able to prioritize and make sure that all the neighborhoods have standards or meet and that their needs are met. Regarding Lower Nob Hill, right now they're not being attended to. You know what I mean? Because there's like seven or more navigation center in Lower Nob Hill. I mean, in that we have, but half of that is in Lower Nob Hill. And we need to make sure that, that we make sure that all the other districts also carry the burden of homelessness and the crisis we have right now.
Thank you.
We need someone who understands all of our District 3 neighborhoods. And that's why I feel so strongly that you deserve someone who's been working in these neighborhoods for the past decade. I think you deserve more than someone who only shows up when it's an election year, or someone who moves into our district just to run for office. Now, our neighborhoods in District 3 are all incredible. They all need different things. Along Polk Street, we need to fill up our empty storefronts. I've been active in doing that here in North Beach. I'll do that along Polk Street as well. Lower Nob Hill, one of our densest parts of San Francisco, is without any true open space. I'll work to create a mini park in Lower Nob Hill. Russian Hill has three mini parks, Lower Nob Hill deserves at least one. And as we go back to Polk Street, which goes everywhere from Russian Hill to Nob Hill to Lower Nob Hill, that is a part of our district, particularly along our commercial corridors, that deserves more support from our police department. It deserves footbeat officers, which it hasn't had in 10 years, and it deserves to be included in Central Station. Central Station cuts off at Larkin. It needs to be expanded fully to match the district boundaries at Van Ness.
So I love to answer this question because it's a typical one where it's like, where is District 3? And so I'll name them. It's Barbary Coast, Telegraph Hill, The Wharf, North Beach, Chinatown, Union Square, Embarcadero, if you can, United or not, Nob Hill, Russian Hill, Polk Gulch, and Lower Nob Hill. I think a lot of it has to do with identity. Once you have identity, you can look into architecture. There are plans, local plans, for each one of the neighborhoods that we really should think up to have those central spaces. Danny mentioned a pocket park. I actually advocate for something stronger in Lower Nob Hill, including a central square, and there are urban design capacities, my specialty, to make that really happen. The Wharf, for example, it's about having residents. So understanding each neighborhood and being able to articulate architectural, urban design, and social situations for each one can really enhance and punch them out, if you will.
Excellent. Okay, so we're running a little bit behind time, and I do want to give people an opportunity to kind of walk up to the candidates and ask them their own questions at the end. So I'm going to skip a couple of questions, and then, so this is going to be the last one, and then you guys will do your closing statements, because I want to give you at least like 15, 20 minutes to mingle. So the last question, and it's going to go, sorry, I got to look at two pieces of paper, it's going to go to Mo. If elected, how would you go about maximizing occupancy of vacant rentals and accelerating projects that are considered shovel-ready today?
I would partner with the San Francisco Building Trades, who have proudly endorsed my campaign, to create financial incentives to unstick the thousands of approved and, frankly, uncontroversial units of housing to get those built right away. I did support the vacancy tax, both on commercial and residential, and that's the stick, but we need a carrot. I have relationships with various landlords. We'll sit down with them through our community organizations and try to figure out what kind of incentives do we need, what kind of culturally appropriate communication do we need with folks to try to understand why are they keeping their properties vacant. I think we need to bring everybody to the table and have a collaborative approach. And that's what I'll do as the supervisor.
Thank you, Sharon.
So as someone who's actually worked in managing properties, you know, one of the things that I think is very dangerous and destabilizing for a community right now is that we're actually creating a system that pushes out the small players, the small landlords, the people that we can actually call up and have a relationship with and do negotiations with. What's happening is we're allowing this opportunity for Vanguards and BlackRock to swoop in and buy up these properties. And they are the ones that are holding these units vacant because they're looking at the return. They're looking at how insurance companies are basically the market is collapsing and it's actually creating a lot of downstream problems for us. So I, as your supervisor, will be working locally as well as state and federally to make sure that we build back insurance options so that properties can continue to be occupied. We also need to, you know, as the power of the supervisor, we can actually advance debt. That is one of the mechanisms that we could use, including tax credits, that we could actually encourage private markets to continue to do what they need to do. We also need to focus on affordable housing and making sure that affordable as well as homeless vacancies are eliminated. Thank you.
I agree with Mo and Sharon, but I also think that the property owners have their rights as well, and you can't force them to do what they don't want to do, so you want to have to sit down. I would, you know, like Mo say, sit down and talk to the landlord and ask them why they're doing that and seeing what kind of incentive they, you know, see what we can do together to help, you know, start them, to have them start renting it out. But also the city could also, help, let's say if a tenant moves in, right, the city can help with part of the rent.
Thank you.
So I supported the residential vacancy tax the other year because I think we've got to do everything possible to get our vacant units back online. We also have to do everything possible to get our many tens of thousands of proposed and approved units actually built. But we have to confront the fact that in San Francisco, it takes 87 permits to build one new unit of housing. We are the longest timeline to approve housing anywhere in the country. In fact, the White House just called us out for that in a special report. That's the work that we need to do. I also think, as was touched on, as it relates to landlords, the city does need to treat the big mega landlords, the million-dollar corporations, different than the small property owners. I certainly want them treating the big mega million and billion-dollar companies differently than my landlord, who is an incredible 85-year-old Italian guy who happens to live next door.
All right, my solution is simple, and I think it combines both sides. I think we need a design framework for the city. With a design framework, we can then relax and allow the free market to take shape. Houses can come online, built or not built, without the need of government intervention, because our intervention should be about how we want the city to feel and architecturally to be. And I think that's very much accomplishable. It could actually spark a national debate, something that we haven't had since Daniel Burnham. The only piece of that was ever built was Civic Center. After World War II, it's been the Federal Highway Act, financing the GI Bill, et cetera, all these things that have gotten the country to be quite suburban. We are maybe the last remaining bastion of urbanism in the country. The other example is New York, and we're very different than that. We should focus on a design framework that allows us to not have to battle buildings at every corner. Thank you.
So how we unlock these units is actually going a little bit off what Sharon said, actually, the macro environment is horrible. People don't want to be in San Francisco right now. Like, that is just the reality. And how we get these units unlocked is by bringing people back to San Francisco. Office vacancies downtown are 40%. Companies are leaving our city in droves. We need to make sure that San Francisco returns to be the beacon on the hill. And we do that by creating safe and clean streets. I talked to management teams downtown. And they asked for two things. One, safe streets so employees can walk to and from work. And two, consistent regulations. We know San Francisco is never going to be the easiest place to do business, but they can forecast their businesses by just having it be consistent. That's number one. And number two is the city can get involved. We can have tax abatements. We can use tax incremental financing. We can modernize the building code, the fire code, reducing some of the regulations rather than continuing to add every year, every year, every year.
Thank you very much. So that was our last question. It is time for your closing statements. So this is your closing statement to all the voters who are here. We'll go in reverse alphabetical order by first name. You each have 60 seconds for your closing statements, and we'll start with Wendy.
I'm a civil rights attorney, and really want to help the people, and that's why I took my time off from work to try to, run for office to help the community, because that's what I do for a living. That's what I do most of my life is to dedicate my service to the people. And so when I go to court, I fight for the people, even though I'm happy they do community work, but my community work for the people is in court. You know, I help change, force the city to change the policy when I sue them. But what I want right now is to see the city, because I love the city, and I want the city to be number one again in the United States. And so that's why I'm running for office. I want to make sure that, we have accountability and transparency, and that the city serve and protect the people and not the other way around, and charge the people all these taxes and stuff like that without giving them back the service they need. Thank you. Oh, yeah. Also, you can follow me on X.
Well, thank you, everyone, for your time tonight. I really appreciate it. You know, I'm running because I love the city. This is the best and most beautiful place in the world for me and my family, and the only place that my kids know to be their home. And I believe that we can get San Francisco to be more functional, to be less ideological, and focus on real solutions that really benefit all San Franciscans. But reforming government, as well as making change and delivering the change that you all need, requires expertise. It requires conveners and people who are capable of building allyship across broad spectrums. And that is why I'm here. I believe that we can work together so that San Francisco can be stronger and safer for everyone. That is the future that I see and I know is possible, and I'm counting on you all to give me your vote, either number one or number two, even number three is great. Thank you for your time again.
Thank you. I love San Francisco, and more importantly, I love District 3. This is the greatest supervisorial district in America, and it's an honor and privilege to run for this seat. Every neighborhood in this district is special and has its own unique needs and concerns. I'm running to make this district and our city to get back to basics. What that means is three simple things. Our streets need to be clean. I will partner with Russian Hill to deliver more street sweeping. We should have 24-hour DPW folks on the streets. San Francisco and this district needs to have the cleanest streets in America. Number two, public safety. We need to fully fund our San Francisco Police Department. We need wholesale change on the police commission so that our rank and file officers know that we have our back. And that's why I'm proudly the number one endorsed candidate at the San Francisco Police Officers Association. And most importantly, we cannot forget our tenants and our homeowners and our small businesses who've dedicated so much to this city, and I will never sell you out to big development and corporate greed. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for sharing your evening with us. I truly appreciate it. This is the last debate so far, so you guys get the last peek. But again, my name is Matt Susk. And I'm running for the Board of Supervisors because, like I said, San Franciscans deserve safe streets, thriving businesses, and government accountability. I'm not a career politician. I'm an outsider. I'm here to bring new voice to City Hall. I believe in public safety, cutting costs, and investing in our local economy, and I have the record to prove it. I'm proudly endorsed by the San Francisco Police Officers Association. I'm a graduate of the San Francisco Police Officers Community Police Academy, where I spent 3 months learning about every division within the SFPD, where they're under-resourced, where they're understaffed. I have an MBA from Georgetown, and I spent the past decade in the private sector, advising government pension plans, starting a small business right here in San Francisco, and helping thousands of families achieve their dreams of home ownership. Thank you again so much for joining me tonight. My name is Matt Susk.
So my name is Eduard Navarro, and as you make your choices, I think this November, you'll see ideologically many of us have similar ideas, so I think your choice will be much more about who can be effective. Educationally, I hold a Master's of Architecture with a concentration in Urban Design from Columbia University. I also hold a Master's of Real Estate Development with a concentration in Finance from Columbia University. Before that, I studied in La Villette in Paris, and before that, I graduated summa cum laude from Georgia Tech in Atlanta. Professionally, I've always been an entrepreneur that forces you to be creative and resourceful. I started a company in Georgia that was designed to build small, new urban towns. After the economic crisis, I was in Saudi Arabia. I was tasked with developing 10 square kilometers of land in a new city. That's twice the size of District 3. And the last 10 years, I spent in Spain investing U.S. capital into housing. We built over 1,000 units of housing throughout the country, from historic preservation to repositioning, and we ended up going into infrastructure. We bought a tunnel entering from France into Andorra. But I love San Francisco. I'm happy to be here. I look for your vote in November.
Well, thanks, everyone. Tonight, I think you heard a lot of ideas, but you deserve more than ideas. You deserve action, and action is what I've already been delivering over these past 10 years as a community organizer. Everything from leading the effort to start the North Beach Farmers Market, to working with our community centers like Tel High and Cameron House, to most recently, leading the community charge to bring a grocery outlet to the old Safeway on Bay Street. That's the work I've done. That's the work I want to continue. Over this campaign, I've had the absolute privilege of knocking on thousands of doors and having thousands of conversations with all of you. And one thing is clear. We want change, and we deserve change. I want you to remember that change doesn't come from those who are backed by the incumbents or backed by the insiders. I love District 3. I love our neighborhoods, and I see them as what they are, incredible communities, not as political opportunities to be used as a stepping stone. I want to work with all of you to make District 3 safer, cleaner, more affordable, and I want to reshape City Hall to get results. That's what you deserve. That's what we all deserve. I hope to earn your vote as the next District 3 supervisor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, so I've got a couple of closing remarks. I am going to ask the candidates to stay up on stage for like 60 seconds when we're totally done, so we can take a picture, if that's okay with you guys. Okay, so on behalf of the League of Women Voters of San Francisco, we want to thank the candidates, you, the voters, and Club Fugazi, North Beach Neighbors, SFGov TV for supporting this nonpartisan forum. And I did skip a shout out to the SFGov TV guys at the beginning of this. I had the wrong script in front of me, so I really want to, they do all of our live streaming and the recording for these events. It's a great partnership that we've had, I think, for probably the last 10 years. We team up with them every election cycle. They're awesome to work with, and they really share our goals of educating and empowering voters citywide, and their support is invaluable. We're an all-volunteer organization at the League, and so these things take actually quite a bit of time to organize, and if we also had to provide, like, an AV team and cameras and all of that stuff, it would literally, there's just no way. We would be doing in-person events or we'd be doing this on Zoom. So those guys, literally, thank you so much. Yeah, round of applause. Yeah. All right, so we want to thank you guys for participating. The League of Women Voters will host candidate forums for most local races, including, we've done Board of Education, D5, D9, D1 and now D3. So we'll do all the district supervisor races, the community college board, the mayor, and the sheriff. If you look at our website, lwvsf.org, you can learn more and you can RSVP to these events. Be a voter and cast your vote by Election Day on November 5th, and there is no excuse in San Francisco. Our Department of Elections is friggin' baller. And there are so many places you can vote, so many ways you can vote here. So vote, it matters. Be the change you want to see right here in District 3. Together, you can build the future that you want in this community, block by block. Remember to vote. Thank you, and good night.